You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental, from my apartment in Bed-Stuy. I'm Andrew Weeb with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. It is Thursday, August 27th. I give you the date because the date is extremely important. You probably know why if you listen to this podcast. On Wednesday, August 26th, 5 of 6 MLS games were boycotted by the players. The only game that went off, Orlando-Nashville, a win for Orlando behind some Gerald DK goals. That's about as much as we'll talk about soccer on this show, which I think is fitting. Today is about the players. Today is about the action they took yesterday. Today is about hearing from them. So we have a series of interviews for you. Kai Kamara, Marc-Anthony Kay, Ryan Hollingshead, Earl Edwards Jr., Jahlil Anibaba, Stephen Fry. Back-to-back-to-back. Their words, not ours. Anything to add, guys, before we roll in? People can find the facts. They can find the statements. They can find all the coverage they want. MLSsoccer.com, MLS Reddit, whoever you follow in your local market, all the people at The Athletic. You know where to find this stuff, and you probably already read it. Do we have anything to say? Do you want to say anything, Dave,
yeah,
Charlie?
I'd say two things up front, which is I don't have anything to say on these on what's going on because we've said so much of it, and the people we're about to talk to are going to say it better. I'd say one is you have to support them and you have to show that in every way. Whether if you're buying a jersey from your team, get their name on the jersey to show that the clubs that you're behind them, because we don't want these players to feel like they're out on their own fighting for this. And social media matters as well. Watching, interacting with stuff, whatever it is you do to support your team, show that you support these players. And the other is that it's unfortunate and I'm embarrassed that these players have to act like this because we asked them to be perfect at something and now we're going to want them to be politicians and activists. And they're taking it on and it's been amazing to watch. But this isn't the reality that has to be, right? They don't have to be this way if we don't create a society which forces them to do it. We asked them to be athletes and they're great at it. They're some of the best in the world. And now we're asking them to do this as well. And they're doing a phenomenal job. But it's unfortunate that that's a reality. And let's never forget that. That it's not our job to break down every single way that they create a political movement or push or boycott or whatever it is they do. Because that's not what they're made to do. And that's not what they want to be doing. Mm-hmm. They want to be out there playing the game and having us complain about the way they do that, which is what we do best. So I think that's unfortunate. It's sad. But I just want everyone out there to not feel broken down because these men and women are out here working and fighting. And we need to be there with them.
I will say that it is so many more. MLS is a part of this conversation and an important part, but the NBA started it. The WNBA is there. You saw the Brewers take a stand. You saw it happen in tennis. You saw it happen all over the world. And I think this is sort of our first attempt to process, react, and understand what happened in our league. But this is not the end of trying to do that for our society. And to be honest, for other societies, for our communities, for ourselves. I mean, this is, as we've said on this show, and as so many of the people we've talked to have said, an ongoing process that never ends. So before we get to Kai, Charlie, floor is yours.
You guys know where I stand. And I think for everyone out there, this is a long, long road with a lot of ups and downs, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. And this is the only way we're going to get to change, to a result, is by going through these periods, these moments of uncomfort, of suffering. And so I know for a lot of people, they're like, I just want to talk about soccer. Well, soccer is just such a small sliver of life. And I've realized it firsthand going through some of the adversity that I've faced. And, you know, I think it just goes to show that for us to be better people, a better generation, we have to do this and listen to what these players have to say. Because in the end, we're going to take another step. We're taking steps. And there's a lot in this process to get to change. But I'm proud of all the fans who have been with us. And I'm proud of all the players. I'm proud of both of you for taking this on. This is a challenge, and no matter how small of a difference we make, we're making a difference. So I appreciate the both of you, and I appreciate everyone listening.
Yeah, I love. We've lost some listeners over the last months. That's fine, man. That's fine. Mm-hmm. We got to say what we got to say, and so do these players. That's what we need to be listening to right now. Soccer is small, but these conversations are big. We start with Kai Kamara of the Colorado Rapids. It's an AT&T call to the field. Let's take a listen. All right, let's bring him on now. Kai Kamara of the Colorado Rapids. Of course, one of the teams that did not take the field last night. Kai, welcome to Extra Time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good seeing you guys.
It's good seeing you, too. So just tell us what happened, Kai. From your point of view, take us back to the start.
Yeah, it was a powerful moment, you know, to be honest. Personally, even before heading to the stadium, I was just feeling funny, you know, just feeling funny being on social media and seeing all the videos and all the things happening, you know, for the past couple of days, actually training here in Colorado. And finally, we're heading out to the stadium. I mean, the conversation just, you know, continued to get heated with the rest of, you know, the black players in the league and just saying, you know, what's going on? What are we doing? And obviously, if me personally, I was like asking some of the guys on my team, like, why are we even playing soccer right now? You know, because like our minds are not even there. So, you know, conversation kept going on. And obviously hearing also, you know, the decisions from the NBA teams, you know, just really empowered us because there's something like when we were at the bubble, you know, the demonstration that we put on empowered the NBA and the players to reach out and say, you know, we're in full support of what you guys have done. And for us to see, you know, our brothers and sisters, you know, the WNBA also out there, you know, standing up for what's right. We felt like there's no way we can just, you know, sit down and not continue to take a stance for what, you know, we're preaching. And to be honest, when we got to the game, you know, myself, you know, was in communication with the players and on our team and communication with the Dallas team. You know, we met a couple times before the start of warm up, which we never made it out for warm up, and just had the conversation over and over, trying to figure out where our mindsets is. And the fact that the conversation was had so much, we really felt like our minds are not even in the game. We're not really thinking about the game. And if we have to go out there to play the game, we want to be 110% focused. You know, we don't just want to go step on saying we just want to do this because obviously, you know, we have to get paid or we worried about maybe getting fined and all that. No, our minds wasn't there. And we felt like it was a time for us to take a stand as, you know, both teams together with the players and, you know, relay a message to our coaches and saying this is what us as a team, which I had a conversation with my locker room and the other guys in Dallas had a conversation with their locker rooms. And we revealed it to our coaches that this is a decision that we're taking. And, you know, we really don't feel 100% that we want to step on the field last night.
From what you've experienced, and you mentioned it, the organization that you had in Orlando, which is something we've never seen in MLS. How did this ripple across the league? You talked about talking with Dallas, but the other teams going on across the league. And what has changed in this league that made something like this possible, which I think, you know, we talked with Charlie. I don't know that this was ever possible before in Major League Soccer for the players to have this type of connection.
No, yeah. And it's what shows that this change and hopefully this togetherness is something that's more powerful than anything. And it's not really just our league. You know, it's great to see the example in our league, but just to see the change and the togetherness in the country, period, you know, starting with all the protests that was going on around the country, because when's the last time you saw, you know, people from different background, different race, everybody coming together and taking the streets? So that's what, you know, it really feels like right now. Then before even starting the conversation on my team, that I had a couple of the players that's not black that actually, because first when the conversation started in our groups of talking, I didn't just right away tell the team about it. And one or two players that's not black came up to me right away like, hey, do you hear what's going on? Do you see what's going on in all these other teams? What are we going to do? And that just, you know, gives you so much confidence to say, okay, everybody's together on this. So when I even started the conversation in the locker room, I didn't even have to say much. And, you know, the players were just like, we're on board. We're with you guys 100%. You know, we want to go play, but if, you know, if people's head is not in this 100%, we can't do it. So the togetherness and the oneness within the players in this league and not just, to be honest, not just the black players. It's what the powerful message, and hopefully the change, you know, is coming, because we're all together and we're all doing it together.
Kai, you are one of the most respected players in the league. You've played for so many seasons, you score so many goals. Not only are you disrespected on a grand scale, but as a black player, when you see the comments from RSL's owner, Delroy Hansen, saying, you know, it's taken a lot of the wind out of his sail when it comes to investing in the squad after seeing this. And how do you move forward as a league? How do you, those RSL players on the field?
I mean, this is me speaking personally for myself. So you can ask Kai Kamara, and not for any, you know, not for the BPC or not for any other black players or other players in the league. But, and then I saw that, and then you obviously saw what Jozy Altidore, you know, put up. And that's really what it is. This is about us. This is about people, humans. And if we're taking a stance, this is not really about business right now, you know. And yesterday I said, it's the first time in my life I've really felt when people say, when you're really mad about a game, they go, oh, it's just a game. And I'm like, what do you mean it's just a game? But it is just a game, because there's people that's been affected in many other ways. We talk about the pandemics and how, you know, people have lost jobs and lives and stuff like that. And we're talking about something right now that's so much more, you know, than me and you, Charlie, being, you know, black athletes, professional athletes, the privilege that we get that the normal black people don't get, you know, that you get pulled over, you're not going to get away with a ticket because I said I play for Colorado Rapids, that they don't get, you know. So now it's okay. Yeah, we do have this platform, which we're going to take. And I respect all the players in Salt Lake that decided to take this stance with LAFC to do what they did. And if it's your ownership, it's not going to back you and stand with you. I mean, to be honest with you, it's a disgrace. And it's really hard to hear stuff like that that comes from that end, because the players there are feeling uncomfortable too, saying we're playing for an ownership group that really doesn't support us, doesn't care for us. I mean, that's not the message that he should be sending out there.
How much thought, Kai, in this decision-making process, in these weeks leading up to it, have you put into, and the people around you, into the idea of the sacrifice? Because when you make a decision like this, you are putting yourself out there in a big way, and you are opening yourself up to repercussions. And we know what for instance, what Reggie Cannon went through when he made his statements. We know
what Reggie Cannon went through is smaller than a player like Kaepernick had to go through. You know, like, he lost a lot, but it's not just about my name, Kai Kamara, or Reggie Cannon, or Colin Kaepernick. This is something bigger. It's for a human race. You know, it's not just for today. It's for the future, our kids and, you know, people after that. But like I said, again, it's not just about me and Charlie or us skin tone. It's you yourself and you guys standing up for us because you believe in what you've never really thought about. You know, you never thought about going into a restaurant and thinking about what you're wearing to go in the restaurant because they won't let you in, you know. Yeah. But then now you're finally hearing that information that we're telling you that, hey, this is real. This is what we have to go through. So now you're feeling the pains that we're feeling. So yeah, it doesn't really just worry about, you know, my name or my profession, saying, oh, I'm going to lose my job, or, you know, what the media is going to really say about me. It's really what you feel inside your heart. And that's what I love. Like, I look at Sasha Kljestan's interview and things that he said, like, it's very powerful because it's a guy that I've known since, you know, we're young and play, you know, around California, and you know people's hearts, and it doesn't matter what color the skin was, but because he knows the environments that he's grown up in, and he knows what it means to just be free and not have to worry about, you know, what happens if I get pulled over.
Kai, it's not your expertise. You don't have to have an answer to this because I don't think any of us do. But you wake up this morning, what are you thinking about? Where do we go from here? Whether it's MLS, whether it's players, whether it's society, whatever it is,
it's hard. Obviously, you know, the change is what we're looking for. It's not even this morning when we got back in our plane to come back home. Yesterday we got home, and driving from the airport was the first time I'm driving, and I'm like, I'm not going too slow, but I'm definitely not going past the speed limit, because now. Mm-hmm. We get home and it's 12 o'clock midnight and the streets were empty, but I'm just like, keep looking around me. I'm like, I don't want to get into any kind of, you know, like get pulled over right now because mm-hmm. it's so empty. There's no one here and I should not have that fear. You know, I wake up this morning and obviously, yeah, I had a conversation with my wife and just tried to say, you know, just play everything back to her, what happened yesterday. But I mean, we're just hoping that we hear some information, one also from our league, you know, from Don to make a statement to, you know, what do we do? Where do we go from here? You know, because yes, as players, we didn't want to be out there because we don't feel like we're 100% ready to be out there, you know, but at the same time from them, from, you know, the commissioner and one owner has made a statement, but other owners can come out and hopefully, you know, what support that they can show towards this movement, you know, could be good. It gives us confidence. It gives you, you know, again, that confidence to feel like the environment that you're in, you have support from that environment to feel, you know, feel comfortable in your skin.
Kind of want you to know, and I hope that we've shown this, and I know we'll have to keep doing so, that one, we're proud of you guys. Two, that we stand with you. And three, that we're fighting the fight with you. And we're figuring this out as we go along. And as you said, it's a process for those of us who haven't had to experience it. And it's a small, minuscule part of it, but it's on us to figure that out. So I want everybody listening out there who doesn't know personally what Kai's talking about or Charlie's talking about to think critically about their life and the people's lives around them and about what they want for our society. It's as simple as that. Don't focus on the what. Don't focus on the protest. Focus on the why. Why is this happening? And what has to change to stop that? I was going to give you, Kai, one more opportunity just to clear your mind. But Charlie, if you have a question, go ahead and I'll let you get the training.
I'm interested as current players. What is the ideal comment that you would want to hear from your owner, Stan Kroenke, or from a Don Garber that would really give you that the confidence that this league, these owners fully back what we're about? Well, they really stand with us. It's not just words, that it's action. What does that ideal comment look like, or that ideal statement?
You want to meet them. You want to meet them, to be honest. I mean, you know, we were in New England together. How many times did we, you know, were in the locker room when Robert Kraft came in and you shook his hand and you, you know, then yes, you didn't give a full speech here and there, but he came in and shook your hand and said hello. For me here, like, I would love to meet our owner. I would love for our owner to come in and have a conversation with the rest of the team and tell us, you know, the support that he has before even going out to the public and then saying, this is what, you know, I'm thinking of my team. This is the decisions I'm making. So whether it's good or bad, I would love for, you know, the owners of different teams to walk into their dressing rooms right now, locker rooms, and have a conversation with their teams, you know, so they can really tell them, you know, where they're at, you know, how they stand, how you really feel. Do you support us where you're at? You know, for example, going into Dallas and thinking they're not going to play the national anthem when the players are on the field because we're thinking about what's going to happen. But that's also silencing the voice that we want to have, you know, is to protest. You can't just tell me we can only protest in a peaceful environment, because this is a peaceful environment, us four of us. You guys are not going to say anything bad of what I'm going to say. So that protest, where is it really going to go? It's going nowhere. But I want to be able to have my peaceful protest in places where you're not silencing my voice, but I know it's a peaceful protest I'm doing. So right now, as you're asking to me personally with the owners, is have people come in. You know, I played in Kansas City where there's five owners and they were around all the time. You can have conversations with them. You can bond with them. So now it's a time where I really feel like all these guys need to spend that extra time to go visit their teams and have a conversation in that locker room. And, you know, so you can really know where you're at, you know, and ask us, what do you want? How do you want us to support you? And it's the same as our, you know, same as Don. Like, Don is the commander of our ship. And, you know, I'm sure he's having a conversation with a lot of people at the moment, but he's probably going to call in another Zoom meeting where he can call the rest of the player pool before making a statement going public to let us know where he stands. And I mean, sometimes they've said, yeah, where the support is, but we also want to hear it again, where it's at before they make a public statement. So call us personally, like your dad or your mom will call you into the room and tell you when you've done something. So let's talk before, you know, it goes out to public.
Before we let you go, Kai, just giving you the platform here. So anything you haven't said you want to say, any message you want to leave people with?
Yeah, it's sports, guys. Yeah, we love sports. You know, we've been crying to say, during the pandemic and all the riots going on, we want live sports back, and, you know, and live sports did come back. But live sports coming back is a distraction to what's really happening. You know, sports is what stimulates our mind, because you can go through a hard day of work or go through different things. But when you come home, you flip on the TV, watch ESPN or Fox or whatever it is, and, you know, you get distracted a little bit. So I'm really happy and I'm glad with the rest of the players in MLS and what we decided to do yesterday, not playing and shutting that screen off for for people to not have that moment, you know, to stimulate their mind and be distracted of what's really the main problem that's going on. You know, I'm a black man, and that's first than me becoming a soccer player. Because when you see me, so please, if you see me and you respect me, and if you follow this, it's really one where we have to continue to fight together, because together is stronger than anything else. And if I feel the confidence that, you know, that somebody to my left and right is supporting what I'm doing and not judging me for what I'm doing it, then, you know, you feel powerful.
Kai, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate you sharing.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Kai.
All right, big thanks to Kai Kamara for joining us and sharing his thoughts, experiences, and maybe what comes next. We're here with Mark Anthony Kay of LAFC. It's an AT&T call to the field. Mark Anthony, welcome to Extra Time, man.
Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
So we know what we're talking about here. It's the only thing that matters in Major League Soccer and honestly the world. And to be real, let's just start with where your mind was at yesterday, because I think everybody saw the tweet that you put out before any of this happened. As the NBA stuff was starting and really picking up speed, where was your mind at? Why did you put that tweet out?
Yeah, you know, I think that with what the NBA was able to do with a short amount of time, it was the great start to an important day in our history of sports in this country, but also a great opportunity to be a part of it. That's what we saw as MLS players. So when I had initially put out my tweet, it was because I was calling out, you know, the MLS and Don Garber to make a statement on what's going on within the U.S. right now. You know what I mean? I feel like MLS is always late to the party when it comes to putting out something and showing that they are in solidarity with their players and showing that they actually protect and care about what's going on within, you know, normal life of everything in the U.S. It doesn't just have to be a result of what's going on the field or within their league. So I feel like they're very slow to that. And I took the opportunity to call them out and see, give them an opportunity to respond. You know what I mean? And they did. And I still think it was a little vague. And it's just like a template that I feel like they have copied and pasted and ready to go. So, you know, if we get past that part, then with seeing real, you know, a real connection between the NBA players. We started to talk between the Black Players for Change, whether or not we could facilitate a sort of boycott in similarity to what they did. And it picked up really quickly. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't have enough time to get Nashville and Orlando City on board because they were already getting ready for, you know, heading to the stadium, getting ready for warm up and stuff like that. But all the other teams were so supportive and got on board. And we really wanted the first game to boycott it. But it didn't work out that way.
Tell me how this works inside LAFC, inside your locker room, as you make this decision as a group, as you talk about it, as you come to the conclusion that you are not going to take the field.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, a lot of our guys are socially aware of what's going on. And it's important to have different voices within the change room, because you can obviously connect with different players, right? You know, once I realized how serious... Oh, my God.
All sorry, good. Guys.
Okay,
all good, man. Yeah, you're
what,
good.
Once I realized how serious it was, you know, I had a conversation with a couple of players saying, like, this is probably going to happen, you know, and we continued to, you know, do our pregame video and all that stuff just in case something was going to change. Once we got on the bus, we had a players-only conversation, and, you know, I told them, personally, I don't believe I'm going to play the game today, whether teams boycott or not. So I had to make a stance there to let them understand how important it was. And, you know, the reaction from my teammates was honestly amazing. You know, I had certain players already being like, if you're not going to play, we're not going to play, before I even was explaining the situation fully. So, you know, it was very quick for us to all be on the same page. And I was just proud of the guys to make that decision without knowing what the ramifications were going to be. And yeah, once we made the decision, you know, our coaching staff were 100% behind us. Our GM was behind us. And we were like, we want to be the first team to make sure we get this out there. And I'm happy we did.
Mark, I know Bob Bradley has been extremely vocal in siding with you, fighting for equal rights. What has that, what have those conversations been like with him and his staff?
Bob is a great guy. We all know, but even in this fight for social justice and social equality, he's been at the forefront of it, and he's given us players so much support and power to use our voice. And, you know, it just shows that he's really about change, because a lot of, you know, I'm sure there's coaches or GMs or owners within the league saying that, yeah, we support our players, but then when something comes out, you know, they're going against the word, or they're silencing players somehow by saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't say that. So Bob has never been like that at all. He's always been the guy who says, yes, you need to speak up for what's right and make sure you speak in a correct way. You know what I mean? It's been amazing. And to know, to have someone like of his stature within, you know, the soccer world support what's going on right now, it means a lot.
This is a very unprecedented moment. Did you ever imagine that you'd be in a place where this would happen? And what were those steps from hearing about it maybe in the NBA and then internalizing it and saying, this is what I want to do and what I want to say?
No, not really. I would never have thought I'd be in this situation. I don't think you can plan for this. You know what I mean? I think you just have to be able to act quickly and do it in a respectful and powerful way. And with what went on yesterday, you know, I took advantage of the opportunity. And, you know, I might lose a lot of followers or lose a lot of people who support me for what I do on the field, but I can't stand by while so many people live in fear in this country. And it's just unacceptable. So yesterday it's so small what we did yesterday, but we're still trying to make sure that people understand that this is a constant problem that needs to change.
Mark, I know you tweeted, we don't feel safe. And there are a number of fans who said, what do you mean you don't feel safe? You're a professional soccer player for LAFC. I would love for you to describe what you mean when you say, we don't feel safe.
So first off, when I say we don't feel safe, I'm talking about all of us. I'm not just talking about myself. Just because I'm a professional athlete and maybe, you know, everyone knows my whereabouts at every second of the day. And yeah, if I walk on the street, people will praise me or something like that. It's like, we don't feel safe because I see myself as a black man. I don't see myself as a professional athlete that gets all these handouts that other people don't get. So when I say we don't feel safe, it's because I truly believe my people don't feel safe in this country. I can't just say or act that I'm indifferent to them because of the career I have. And I know the fact that I get treated certain ways is because of what I do. It's not because people accept me because I'm black. A lot of it's because of, oh yeah, he plays for that club, or he's a soccer player. And that's why people respect me. And that's not okay. People should be respecting me for who I am, not because of what I do. So when I say we don't feel safe, it's because I inject myself into that population of people who are constantly being mistreated by people who are supposed to protect us.
You've got a bunch of teammates who stood with you who aren't black men in America, who showed what they were about. We're going to talk to Ryan Hollingshead here in a little bit. When you look around the league and you look around at supporters and fans and everybody who loves Major League Soccer and supports you in that career, what would you ask of people who aren't black, who haven't experienced that? How can they be the best possible allies they can be? How can they be a part of the change? How can they be examining themselves to be a part of the fight that they need to be a part of?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's not going to be comfortable. It's not going to be a comfortable transition, but you need to ask the hard questions. You need to have those difficult conversations. You need to be open to being wrong and having your mind changed and understanding that, you know what, maybe you thought a certain way once, but now you understand that that's not okay. So change is a tough transition, but people need to embrace it. And I think there's a lot of people within the MLS who, yeah, aren't black, and our fans and supporters and teammates and players, all this, that do a great job of supporting. And I just ask them to continue the fight. When I see all of the players at RSL who are agreeing with not playing the game, you know, I go up to every one of them and I say thank you, because they might not be experiencing what, you know, black people have to experience in the US or understand what it feels like to be a black person in the US, but they understand their power and they're using it and taking advantage of it. So I just want to say thank you to all those people and encourage us to continue the fight and add more people to it.
The reaction to what Reggie Cannon said after that game in Dallas Frisco was disgusting. Have you gotten any pushback? I mean, you talked about social media. I mean, does that even deserve to be in this conversation?
I'm sure it's there. People are always going to have their opinions. And you know what? people are allowed to have their opinions. It's fine. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I know what I'm standing for, and I know what I'm standing for is right, and that I'm actually standing for their equality too. You know what I mean? They might think I'm just fighting for only black people. I'm fighting for all of us. So if they want to go against me, if they want to say things that only, you know, highlight their ignorance or their inability to see real change, then that's okay. You know, and it just highlights that there's still a real problem within this country. So it's part of it. There's always going to be backlash, and you just got to not focus on that, only the positive impact you have.
And what happens now? What are the conversations like with your team today? What have you talked to people about? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, so obviously we're in training today. We'll see what the vibe is like. Obviously, it's been an interesting 72 hours for a lot of players. But we will have a call tonight with Black Players for Change to figure out what we want to demand from the league and what we expect, you know, the commissioner to do. If he really wants to be a part of this, like, he's going to have to give up some power in these situations and let the players kind of lead the initiative that we feel is right. So, you know, even with the RSL owner saying this stuff, it just highlights how much of this stuff that has been pushed under the rug for so long. So, yeah, we're going to figure it out. You know, I'm not the sole person who makes the plans. So I got to go back to the collective group and figure it out. But, you know, you guys will find out once we all know.
Mark Anthony, I know you have training here, man, so we can't keep you too much longer, but I do want to give you just this last opportunity. If there's something you haven't said, something you feel strongly about, something you need to say, floor is yours.
All I'm going to say is change is uncomfortable. That's it. Change is uncomfortable. And you know what? It's just, you have to get on board with it. And it might be tough to swallow it at first, but just keep trying to understand people's perspectives. And hopefully, you know, that adds more people to our fight. But like I said, change is not comfortable. So don't expect it to be a routine thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mark Anthony Kay.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, Mark Anthony Kay of LAFC has been a leader on this front throughout. You saw what he did. His words are so powerful. Let's welcome somebody from FC Dallas on now, Ryan Hollingshead. It's an AT&T call to the field. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So you were right there with everybody else yesterday. And of course, we saw from the comments of Reggie Cannon, sort of the place that you were with him when the boos came down at in Frisco against Nashville. Just tell me about yesterday from your perspective, how things happened, why they happened, and what it was like to be in that locker room.
Yeah, just extremely proud to be a part of the locker room I'm a part of. We have something special within the locker room of FC Dallas and a group of guys that not only are fierce competitors and amazing players, but also care about these issues deeply, you know, and it's, you can see it in their face when they talk about it. You can see it in their tears when they talk about it. You can see it all the way from, you know, from our office staff to our owners, to the players, everybody. It's been consistent across the board within our association, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it. It was a tough decision because of how quickly it came on, right? It snowballed pretty quickly from the Bucks kind of taking their stance and then some MLB teams following and then getting into the locker room for our games last night. We got in late afternoon, Central time. And it was kind of this like rush to decide what was going on. Are we all taking this stance? We all wanted to take the stance. We all knew and had discussed this before. FC Dallas had discussed this before within our group, what we believe about this issue, what we believe about our platform. And I want to be clear because, you know, I'm not sure how big our platform is or how big it's not, but if you care about any issue, no matter how big your platform is, you're going to use whatever platform you have to preach that issue. And so this is our moment and this is our time, and it doesn't matter if we have 2,000 fans in the stadium or, you know, a million fans watching us on TV or whatever the numbers are. It's like, we as human beings care about an issue. What platform do we have to preach that issue? And we're going to use that platform as much as we can.
How do you get a locker room on the same page in that way that is so diverse? And that's true of every locker room in Major League Soccer. We know that. What are those conversations like? Like, what's coming out of people? What's being said? Is there disagreement? Is there pushback? How do you come to a consensus with 28 guys on something that is very big?
Yeah, it's an incredibly important question and a really difficult question, because you've got guys, like we were talking about, you've got guys from Central America, South America, Europe. You've got guys from Canada, you know, United States. We're spread, Mexico, we're spread all over the place in our roster. And that's very similar to a lot of teams. And some of these guys, I would say a good percentage, maybe 30% of our team, doesn't understand American politics. They don't care about American politics. They don't care about American social issues. They don't care about any of this stuff. Their culture is in a completely different place than our culture is when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement, when it comes to these social issues that are being fought for here in the United States. And so for them, they're like, wait, I came here to play soccer. I'm not even sure what this is about. I don't even know what Black Lives Matter means. Obviously, I care about Black people. Like, that's not even a question. It's just like, there's a lot of confusion. And so for most of us, it's educating them on, hey, this is what it means. This is why it's important. This is why we believe it's something worth boycotting, standing up for, kneeling for, whatever it is. And it's usually pretty quick within that conversation that people are like, got it. Okay, that makes sense. No, yeah, no problem. I understand it now. And a lot of times, even then, if they don't understand it, they'll look at us and be like, okay, I don't fully understand it, but I love Reggie. I'll do whatever I need to for my brother. Like, I love Fafa. I'll do whatever I need to for my brother. I love my teammates. Like, I'm with you. Whatever you need from me, we'll do it together. Like, we're teams, we're a squad, we're doing this together. And so that's special. And I don't know that that's true across all locker rooms, but that's true in ours.
Ryan, I've heard that your ownership group wanted you to play the FC Dallas squad after you guys had already agreed on the boycott. Can you walk us through some of those discussions?
The big kind of background for what is happening was Nashville and Dallas, we are the first ones back to play in our original markets. We have fans in the stadium. There was kind of a lot of people talking about what we were doing. Were we doing it the right way? We were the first to kind of kneel in our original markets. And so in that kneeling, we got a ton of pushback from fans, from supporters, from people across the nation. Pushback from a lot of people. And in that pushback, a lot of death threats, a lot of homophobic comments, a lot of racist comments, a lot of just unacceptable reactions from people, regardless of what you believe about the issue, regardless of how you feel. There's a way to express that and there's a way to not express that. And the ways that it was being expressed towards us and towards our association and organization was not okay. In that, Dan Hunt and Clark Hunt, majority Dan Hunt because he's our president, is dealing with these threats towards his office staff. And so it's not only happening with the players, but it's happening with his office staff. He's sitting across from people multiple times this last week, just sobbing in his office, crying because they can't handle it, right? They're not used to being booed. They're not used to being threatened. As players, we're a little bit more used to that. We're used to dealing with that sort of pushback from fans. And so we can handle it. It's not a huge deal, but the office staff was having a much more difficult time. And so he, as the owner and kind of leader of our organization, was feeling the stress of like, man, are we ready for what the pushback is going to be on this? Cause it's going to hit hard. And are we committed to this? And so we had told Dan, we're not playing, we're boycotting this game. We explained to him why and laid out exactly what the process was and why we felt this way. And Dan had responded by saying, okay, but I think we should play. Are you guys committed? Like, I think we should play. And we put our foot down again and said, yes, we understand what this means. And so I think the miscommunication was Dan first came in and said, guys, my job is to protect you as my players. It's to protect the office staff. Are you sure you know kind of the pushback that we're going to get as an organization? And we said, yes, we're sure. And the immediately after saying that, he agreed and said, okay, then we're in it all together. We're in it. We're out of this game. It's boycotted. And I want to make one statement that he made and try to quote it verbatim because it was a really powerful statement. And it was a statement about him caring more about the human being than about the soccer player. And in that statement, he said, guys, we've already lost season ticket members. We've already lost supporters. We have sponsors already lined up to drop us next year because of what we've done, because of the stance that we've taken for the Black Lives Matter movement so far. And he's like, this is a business. We care to make money here. But I want you guys all to hear from me. This organization and my soul is not for sale. These guys cannot buy our loyalty. They cannot buy our social stances. They can't buy our our messaging, right? We decide that as a club, and it is clear as a club, we need to stand against injustice. And so we're going to do that. And it was a really powerful message and showed how much Dan cares about this.
Let's talk about
that's powerful.
Let's talk about the Reggie side of this, Ryan, because in his sort of his words after that match in which you guys were booed when you kneeled against Nashville, he invoked your name and said that you guys had a conversation on the field. And I'm just wondering, from your point of view, your personal perspective, how did you experience all of that, from the kneeling pregame and the reaction to Reggie's comments to the reaction to Reggie and the week since then? I mean, it's really been a blender you guys have been in.
Yeah, I'm so proud of Reggie. I mean, what an amazing man he is. What an amazing player he is. And then he's taken it upon himself in a lot of ways to be the leader of our team of FC Dallas in this movement. And so I'm incredibly proud of him. And obviously, it means so much to these guys who have dealt with systematic racism throughout their entire childhood, throughout their entire lives, who have played while hearing these racist remarks in the middle of games. And so I don't know it. Like, I'm not in their bodies, I'm not in their lives, I'm not in their skin. I don't know those things. And so the most I can say is, like, what do you need from me, man? How can I help you? How can I come alongside you, support you, fight for you, fight with you, anything? You just let me know. And what's clear is, as human beings, if we're watching any of our other fellow human beings come to us and say, guys, I'm hurting. Like, I haven't been treated well. I'm hurting. I feel like there's things wrong here. And I feel like I'm on the worst. And I'm on the losing end of it almost every time. And for us as humanity to look at them and say, like, nah, everybody matters. Nah, like, you guys are fine, is ridiculous. Like, we wouldn't do that with anything else. We wouldn't do that for anything else in our lives. And so I'm sitting here looking at Reggie like, yeah, I hear you. How can I help? What do we need to do? And so it just happened to be Reggie and I knelt next to each other when we walked out on the field that first game against Nashville. I was standing next to Reggie. We knelt next to each other. And the second our knees hit the ground, a couple of our fans, I want to be clear, most of our fans, 99% of our fans have been amazing, incredibly supportive. It's the 1%, right, who's the loudest, the most vocal. And they started booing. One of them threw something onto the field, trying to hit the players with something. Another one started chanting USA, you know, like, just crazy remarks. And I'm sitting there on a knee next to Reggie, who has poured his last week out into organizing this because of how deeply he feels towards these injustices that have been shown to him, to his family, to his people. And I'm like, so after that, I was overtaken in the middle of that all happening. And after that, I sit up and I'm like, Reggie, I'm so sorry. Like, that is not how we feel about these issues. Those five people or whoever it was that stood up and said those things and booed and whatever, like, that's not the majority is what I told him. And I said, I'm so sorry. And so I think we just connected on that. I wasn't meaning to say anything. I just felt it. I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe you have to deal with this. I can't believe by silently kneeling, like, the most peaceful thing you could possibly do, that you're going to get criticism in that way from your own fans. So anyway, I responded in that way, and that kind of got me into the cycle with Reggie and some of these things. And I would do it all again 100 times over, whatever I have to do, however I can support, I'll do it.
So you're in that cycle, and we've spoken on this show a lot about, you know, our responsibility in these moments. You know, this isn't a new experience for Charlie and the Black players who have come on here. They're not learning right now. They're just trying to express what they've experienced. Yourself and us are learning. We want other fans. We want other people in this league. We want people in this world to act a little bit more like what you've done. What have you learned from Reggie, from what he wants? What have you learned from the experience over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, month, that you want to pass along?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've learned, first of all, that a lot of these conversations and a lot of the dialogue happening is more of a monologue and people just blurting out disrespectfully what they feel and not caring about the other side. Like, there's no communication. There's no, like, hey, let me hear your side of the story. I want to hear your side of the story. Let's just talk about it. Let's have an open communication. There's been very little of that. It's been a lot of, like, this is how I feel. Suck it up, eat this comment, take it with some threats, with some whatever else is in there, and, like, move on. And so that part to me is has taught me, I want to be the opposite in the way that I respond. I want to respond with like, with just dialogue and with grace and with respect. And so, I think that's the first thing. The second thing I've learned, and this I think is, partly Reggie and partly just me trying to educate myself, is it's really hard for white America to continue to ask black people to educate them on what white America has done to them. And I heard a quote that I thought was really good, and I don't even know where it was from. I'll probably butcher it, but it was something to the extent of like, it's hard for a black man who's got a foot on their throat to then describe to you how that foot feels, you know? And so it's like, for me as a white man, I'm like, I need to educate myself. Like, it's on me to educate myself and to jump in and not always just count on my black brothers and sisters to do all that educating for me. Like, they're the ones that are being oppressed. And now they're the ones too that need to then teach their oppressors. And now they're the ones too that have to like lead the charge. And so, in all of these ways, one, I'm just super grateful that they're willing to step into those spaces because it's hard and it isn't how it should be. And two, I'm trying to make that as easy as possible by doing my own education, learning, and trying to support in every way that I can.
I have one question, Ryan. You know, it's not often that a white player gets messages of hate and backlash because of who they're associated with. That doesn't happen often. So how have you and some of your teammates been able to deal with that? And then two, of all the atrocities that we've seen as of late, between Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, now Jacob Blake, is there one that really hits home for you, that really was, you know, the one that kind of got you to kind of, you know, stand up and say, you know, okay, this one really hit home?
Gosh, I mean, I think they all have. If I was choosing one, I think Breonna Taylor would be the one that for me is like her killers, alleged killers. I should use the right wording so that I'm not, you know, saying something that the judicial system hasn't decided, but that they're not even arrested yet, right? Like that she was in her own apartment, right? Like there's some things for me that I'm just like, man, as a white man, I've never had to worry about that. Like, I don't have to talk to my kids about how to address police officers when they are in contact with him. Like I'm now beginning to understand just the fear that is just way too consistent with people of color that shouldn't be there. Right. That fear that if they're in the wrong situation, they can just be killed for no reason. And so that to me, Breonna Taylor is probably one, but again, it's just the consistency of it. It shows that even in the midst of all that has gone on in the last 3 months, these officers with Jake Blake are feeling confident enough that they can pull a gun and fire it in the midst of all that they've seen over the last 3 months. To me it's insane. It's insane. And so that was the first part. The second part of your question was just, you know, dealing with these threats and walking alongside my brother. And I think that for me, I'm a Christian as well. And so a lot of my life is in response to who I think Jesus is. And I think all men are created in the image of God. And it doesn't matter your skin color. It doesn't matter your disability. It doesn't matter your IQ level. It doesn't matter how tall, how small, how big. It doesn't matter. You're made in the image of God. And so we are all with the same dignity, all with the same worth, all with the same value, all to be treated equally across the board, not equal with sub points, but just equally across the board. And so for me, I know in my life, I've signed up for suffering. Like I've signed up for my life as a Christian to be more difficult. And so these threats to me are almost just like proof that I'm doing what I should be doing, you know, mm-hmm. proof that I'm walking the right path, because the path for me is narrow that leads to life and it's wide that leads to death. And so if I'm on a narrow path, it's going to be full of these sorts of comments, full of these sorts of death threats. And so, man, it pumps me up, honestly. And I'm like, I can handle it. I'm a grown man. I have a good mentality. I can handle these threats. Throw all the threats you want at me. If it means I'm standing next to my brother, if it means Reggie gets one less threat because I got 100 more, I'll take that in a heartbeat. And so that's my mentality for it. And I mean, I'm a white privileged male, you know, who has been set up for success in every potential way my entire life. I can take a couple comments, you know what I mean?
And thank you for sharing with us your experiences and your perspective. We really appreciate it. Best of luck to you and all the boys down there in Dallas.
Thanks, guys. Thank appreciate you, it.
Big thank you to Ryan Hollingshead for joining us and sharing his thoughts here. Let's keep it moving. That's what we're here to do today. Give the players the platform. Earl Edwards of DC United is here. He's part of BPC, part of the leadership council in that group. Earl, welcome to Extra Time. It's an AT&T call to the field.
Thank you. I've seen the show many times, but I'm fortunate to be a guest on it today.
Oh, really? Really? Okay.
Nah, he's just buttering you up.
Feels like a lie. I don't know. Maybe I'm doubting you on that one, dude. Let's get logistical here. You know, let's talk about how this happened, because the unity, but the number of people involved and the different markets and the communication, it occurs to me that this has to have been a very mad race, because, you know, the Bucks thing, if I'm remembering my afternoon correctly, was about 4:30 Eastern time. And then all of a sudden you start to see the trickle down, and then all of a sudden it enters our MLS world. And what you guys did and were able to do in that time frame is frankly incredible.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been a big point in our organization as the BPC, is how organized we have been. And it's strictly player-led. We don't have any outside leadership in that sense. So we've organized ourselves. We've gotten our communication to a really high level. So as that news broke with the Bucks, I found it around 5. Messages started coming in our WhatsApp group. We have a BPC leader on each team. Those messages started coming in, and then quickly starting to evaluate if it's something it's worth us doing. So we kind of had a bunch of back and forth, whether it's something we want to do. And, you know, it was a tough decision for some. You know, it's kind of a spectrum of guys. Some were like, oh, I'm boycotting, I don't care what anyone else is doing. Others were, well, are there going to be consequences? Who else is on board? And that's from some of our members. That's from teams, the entire teams in locker rooms throughout the league. So a lot of moving parts and a lot of different ideas going into it. But as members of the BPC and as board members specifically, we were able to get on Zoom calls and really communicate as to where we thought we could truly make an impact. And I think being in alignment with the NBA made sense to us, especially as board members. We've signed up to be catalysts in this thing. And having seen what the NBA did, it made sense for us to follow suit and take a stand. And boycotting a game is such a significant stance to take. We know it wasn't easy for guys to make that decision within the locker rooms on that given day, but I'm happy they did. And I know it took, I know it wasn't easy for each locker room where everyone was on board. I don't think that was the case in any locker room. And the fact that in a team sport, you're able to communicate with your fellow teammates and everyone is able to get on board and agree that, okay, we can put the game aside and focus on the bigger picture here and supporting and fighting for Black lives, I think is what everyone understood yesterday. Including Orlando and Nashville that were under a time crunch, and hearing those guys speak after the game, having spoken to them since, given the time crunch, it wasn't something that they could pull off in time. And I'm talking to the point of, like, I'm trying to call Jaleel, I'm texting Jaleel, and his phone has to be off within the minute that I'm sending a reply text because of laws in terms of when your phone has to be off in the locker room. So things were really coming down to the wire. At that point in time, the MLB hadn't protested. WNBA hadn't taken their stance yet, I don't think. So there was a lot of, at that point, it was just NBA. And it, like I said, it's a really tough decision to make. So obviously their game went out and was played, but that doesn't show any lack of support on my end, from my understanding of where those guys stand in this fight. And then the rest of the teams were able, with the time they had, to get within unison and all boycott those games and get them postponed by the league. So, yeah, a lot of moving parts logistically. I'm glad we were able to execute.
I want to ask, though, about that decision, and I guess the word is sacrifice, of what it does mean to not play a game, because not playing a game for Giannis Antetokounmpo means something different than Mark Anthony Kay, Kai Kamara, and an Earl Edwards. Everyone has a different experience, and also it's going to have blowback to everyone in different ways. I'm curious, you know, we talk about change being hard, what those conversations were like when players say, I need to play because I need to get paid and this is my job. And these are the things we do. Where do you find those lines and those conversations of this is the stand we have to take here and now?
Yeah. And I think to credit the NBA players, I think them being the catalyst for this thing really provided the momentum for following leagues to follow suit. But with that being said, the making the choice to not play a game and sacrifice possible income or repercussions in that sense, I get there's a scale to it, but the sacrifice on their part is the same on ours, and there's intimidation, and it's a scary thing to make that decision on. But I think it really, really goes to show what's important right now. And I think, unfortunately, prior to Jacob Blake's shooting, there was this massive dip in the cycle of people wanting to express their support, post, whether that's posting on social media or actually doing things and donating. But there was definitely in conversation a dip in support and people kind of wanting to get back to this business as usual or returning to normal. So, it's unfortunate that it took Jacob Blake's shooting for people to realize that the problem's still there. But feeling that the response since George Floyd's killing hasn't been enough across the board in our country, and that's organizations, individuals, politicians, everything. The response hasn't been enough for Rayshard Brooks to follow it up quickly, and now we got Jacob Blake a few months removed from that. Like, the change isn't happening, and it's not happening fast enough. And for us to be able to take a stand and make that sacrifice as a whole player pool for what happened yesterday, that's what's really impressive to me, because as Black people, it's clear and obvious that our lives are our priority, and that's kind of spelled out. But to have the support of the league the way we did, and the remaining player pool to show that support and solidarity and care for our lives more than the game, and care for our lives more than the paycheck on that day, that speaks volumes. And I hope we'll create some real change and impact here moving forward.
We talked about how you did it and what you guys did, but I'm curious, when you formed the group and you guys got together and you started to think about how to make change, whether you thought this sort of moment was possible, whether this was something that you felt would be in your tool bag at some point, if you needed to use it in this sense to bring the focus back to what you were about in the first place, or whether this may have taken you by surprise that this is something that in this day and age, I mean, God, what could surprise you in 2020, but that you can accomplish and do in this amount of time with these challenges?
Well, I'll take a step back, I guess. Getting organized for our protests in Orlando, talk about like logistics. That's something that we were planning for weeks. It's probably over 100 hours of calls and planning, and even the walkthrough the couple nights before. Like, logistically, there was a lot of time put into that. And I think the logistics yesterday obviously moved significantly faster, but the fact that we had that experience with our initial protest, the amount of meetings we have had, the partnerships we've been able to form with other organizations, the funding we've been able to get with other organizations, being able to communicate at a high level and get organized quickly is something that our group has been forced to do in order to be able to create the change that we are looking for. So this specific instance of boycotting a game never crossed our minds until the NBA did it. But a testament to our group, all the experiences we've had allowed us to execute on it in 2 hours or less time. So, I mean, we're, like you said, nothing should surprise, should surprise you in 2020, but more specifically as Black people in this country, we're met with racial injustices on a daily basis. So we understand as a group that we need to be organized and be able to communicate efficiently and quickly, so when opportunities do arise that we can execute. And I think that's what we were able to do yesterday.
Earl, we spoke with Kai earlier, and he wants more messaging, more direction, more guidance from the top down to say, you know what, we're with you. We're going to take this stand, back it up with actions. what actions do you think are needed across the league, across the ownership groups, across the coaches to really make a difference, to make an impact?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I think as of right now, it's just been like a Twitter statement and as a reaction, or an Instagram post as a reaction. And outside of that, I know I haven't seen many clubs. I'll be clear, DC United, specifically with the club I'm at, they've had a diversity inclusion group. It's something they've brought me into. Bill Lemie, Chris Adoy, and other Black players as well. We've had a say in shirts we've created. And there's other initiatives that we're going to do here moving forward, where I truly feel at DC that there's a commitment to the cause. I don't know if you guys have seen the statement they put out today, but they're the first organization to truly voice being in support of the BPC, which I don't understand why that's taken, why other clubs haven't taken that step. But for me personally, in the situation I'm in, I feel that DC's in a place of like, okay, this is what I would be looking for in a club, where I have open access to front office employees and how we can move forward. And they're allowing me to have say in things. And so for me, speaking on that, that's true support. I feel supported. I feel like I have resources within my club to make an impact. And I think the focus for DC, and this makes sense to me, is the local market, our local market. And I think if we did that across the board, it's a nationwide league. We can cover a lot of the country and make an impact in our local markets. And I think that's the best way to go about it. So from that sense, it's just been statements for me. So whether it's putting together mentorship programs or donating to charities or funding for the BPC or something, putting an organization together similar to DC United's. I'm just not seeing outside of like, oh, just these statements of it's unfortunate this happened, we support the movement. Like you said, there's been minimal action. So if there is going to be another statement, I would like it to be this: it's been unfortunate what Black people are going through. We're in support. Here's how we're going to support here moving forward. Because so often it ends with we're in support. So I think, there's so many different ways to go about showing support, and to be doing nothing but words is disturbing.
Not disagreeing with you at all, Earl. Just want to throw out there for fans, Seattle's put some stuff out there, an initiative working with the census and voting and raising money. So you're right. It hasn't been enough. But if any fan out there is trying to find a place to get involved, I'd recommend to go check out Seattle's website.
Yeah, it's a Disney.
And I would like to add, there's probably clubs that maybe are doing something that I'm not aware of too. So I don't want this to be, if clubs and other players are seeing this, I'm sure there might be stuff I'm unaware of as well.
Yeah, New England Revolution are as well with Change.
That's awesome. And that stuff's great. And just make it more public.
Yeah.
You know,
amplify.
Yeah, exactly. That should be the same way I'm looking at. We didn't play games yesterday because that's not the priority right now. And so for clubs, I know we have sponsors and this other stuff, but at the end of the day, you have Black lives being taken on a regular basis. And what should move to the top of the priority list, I think, seems like an obvious thing to me. So that amplification of what's going on and how you're truly supporting and making a change, go for it. It needs to be more than just these statements, and keep amplifying how you are creating this change and let people get involved, because that's how you'll truly have an impact.
Earl, we got one more for you. And I think about the NBA and where the story is right now, and a lot of the talk is about what comes next. Will teams play? And we're seeing more cancellations and postponements there. What's your feeling, and what are the conversations like about what comes next for MLS players?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, something I've been dealing with all day, and that's from players on my team, from coaching staff, members in the BPC. It was a very, like I said, raw and organic thing to follow suit with the NBA, and it was important for us to make a statement, and it is important for us to have a plan here moving forward. So we're meeting on it today. We'll figure out how we want to move forward. I think the biggest thing for me is I hope the league understands that this is our priority, specifically the BPC. But I'm starting to understand that the support of the broader player pool is there as well. And until I think what would be much appreciated on the BPC side, and again, as I'm understanding the broader player pool as well, is true, genuine support from the MLS, from the league, and not follow-up statements and reactions, and a proactive showing that they're going to be in support of this long-term.
Anything you want to leave us with, Earl? I mean, open forum for you, man. Anything you didn't say, want to say, feel like you should say?
Nothing specifically. I think, again, hats off to the guys that were able to pull that stuff off yesterday. And for those of you that aren't aware, I know you may have seen it online, but I had a moment last night where I'm seeing yesterday was the 4-year anniversary of Kaepernick kneeling for the first time. I'm not a religious person, but I believe the world works in mysterious ways. I don't think that's a coincidence. And the way Kaepernick was, in my opinion, left hanging during that time, and how ahead of his time he was. I know that's a bizarre thing to say, given the likes of Muhammad Ali and athletes before him. But in that time, he was on an island and ahead of his time, so to speak. And I'm glad, following suit of the NBA and seeing this sweep our country and across the spectrum of sports, I'm glad to see that not only black people, but players across all leagues are in this fight together now.
Thanks. Well said. Earl, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Earl,
for your efforts. Proud of what you guys appreciate did and what you'll do in the future, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Powerful words from Earl Edwards Jr. Big thanks to him for guiding us through some of the logistics. He talked a little bit about the first match of the night on that Wednesday. That would be Nashville-Orlando. In Orlando, Jaleelani Baba was there as a member of Nashville SC. He's on the line now. It's an AT&T call to the field. Jaleel, welcome to Extra Time.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too, man. Let's do the same thing we've done with everybody else, which is just kind of tell us about Wednesday from your point of view.
So, you know, obviously, it was a night that I don't think any of us throughout the league, directly involved, you know, looking from the outside in, have ever experienced before, which, you know, by and large can be said for a lot of what is happening, throughout our country and throughout the world right now. But as far as what happened last night, you know, we essentially got to the stadium and we didn't hear anything about, teams, you know, actually, thinking about boycotting the game until it was essentially too late for us to really, make a professional decision. You know, so of course, I think at least based on what we've shown as a club, I think it's very clear where we stand, where the players within our locker room stand on the issues. I think it's clear, that we've shown, you know, our willingness to put ourselves out there. You know, we were involved in the first game that had fans, and all of our players knelt. You know, we were involved in the game where Reggie ended up taking a lot of the backlash, and it doesn't all fall on him, which I hope everybody understands at this point in time. But our whole thought process as a club within our locker room is to stand in solidarity. You know, and that's what last night was about as well. When there isn't enough time to make, like I said, a professional decision, things really have to, you know, be thought through, even when you're in a crunch time situation. Some of the other teams had the ability to get guys from each locker room and discuss. We didn't have that opportunity. Other teams had the ability to get on Zoom calls even before they were going to, you know, officially make the stance. At the point in time where we were essentially getting ready to start our game, it was still, the plan was being formulated, and that isn't a problem. I don't think that is, you know, a source of blame for anyone on any side of this, but we wanted to make sure that everyone was unified in what we were doing. And we felt that it would make a lot more sense for us not having any time to decide, for us to go out and play and then all the other games boycott, as opposed to us making a decision that was, I would say, lacking in the ability to prepare. And then we don't play and then other teams play after us.
As this all is happening, I mean, Earl said he's trying to text you and he knows your phone is off and you're trying to prepare for a game, but you're also in the middle of making a huge decision or trying to make that decision. What did those moments feel like for you? I mean, just personally, the amount of stress, and I'm trying to think of the right word to use, but pressure, I would think, to make a decision or to get things going, or what does it mean if we don't? I mean, I can't imagine that moment. So I want to understand how you felt.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's, people like to harp on like the quote unquote pressure of the moment. But like, what people don't understand is that this is our life. This is my life. This is how this goes. This is what we are dealing with every day. So it's not like just because a very serious decision was being made throughout the entire player pool and it was happening like this, doesn't mean that after the decision's made or after the game is over and now a day removed from that, the pressures of the situation just go away.
Yep.
They're still there. They're there before the game started, day before the game, 2 days before the game. They're there. So for me, my mentality is that like, once you're in the realm of playing a game, you're there. Once you're, you know, outside of that realm of playing the game or not playing the game or whatever have you, this is our reality. And I think this is one of the crux of, this is like the crux of what we're talking about here. Like, guys that look like me in this country, we don't have the ability to shut it off. We don't have the ability to say, oh, this only surrounds the game and we're trying to decide if we're going to play tonight. No, because as soon as I leave the stadium, you got to understand that things that surround the game, that's actually when we're the most safe. Like, but once we leave the stadium, once we take off our Nashville SC polo and we're not recognizable as, you know, we're not recognizable by our profession, there's no difference between us and a George Floyd or anyone else. And that's, so I hope that answers your question in terms of like, you know, what quote unquote stress I was dealing with, you know?
Yeah, and I think I was coming out more logistically, but you're right. This is just life. That is what it is for you, and that is the point. Sorry, Dave, I cut you off.
I was going to say, Jaleel, just from this standpoint where you all come together, you don't play, there's solidarity shown, but what's next? What do you need to see from the league? What do you need to see from the players across the league, when you see an owner like Deloy Hansen from Real Salt Lake come out and make those comments, where are we headed? What's progress?
That's the, what is progress is the $1 million question. What's next is, you'll see a decision made from a unified decision made from the players, probably by the end of today. Just based on everything that's going on and what we see makes the most sense in terms of moving forward. All those conversations are being had throughout the day. And like you saw yesterday, a decision will be made that's a professional one, one that's thought out, and one that guys are behind. You know, and what's progress when you continue to see I guess what would be thought as avenues of progress constantly shut down in front of your face. It's hard to put a finger on it because, you know, you're constantly reminded that people really don't care. You know, people really don't give a shit. So like it's one of those things where you have so many people, you know, standing up for obviously a just cause. You have things that are happening in our league, in ways of positivity and progress and unity, throughout the entire player pool that we've never seen before. You know, I've been in this league for 10 years. Charlie, you've been around for forever. Weeby, you've been around forever as well. We've never seen anything like this, where you have guys of all different races weighing in on these things, talking about these things. And we're not politicians. So what we can do is we can bring awareness and bring attention and bring the seriousness to all of this, and do our part to mobilize ourselves and to organize ourselves and to mobilize people to be on the right side of history. So I think it's very, very clear what progress represents with this. We're talking about when someone is killed, the people that have killed that person are arrested and they are given due process. On that point, once you have that, you can talk about all of the other things. You can talk about the qualified immunity. You can talk about, voter suppression. You can talk about, all of the whole slew of issues that trickle down from that. But we are talking about people killing other people in our country and just getting off scot-free. Actually, not, you have to be hooked by something to get off of something. There's no accountability at all.
I'm wondering for fans out there listening, because you talk about the unity in players right now, and we've heard some from coaching staffs as well, front offices. What can the fans do to be a part of this, to help support the initiatives, or anything emotionally, mentally, whatever, for players in this league and then for society?
Yeah, I think the more fans are vocal in their support is very helpful. The more that fans, don't take a back seat and just wait for things to happen, the more powerful it is. You know, things that fans can do are, you know, when things like making certain TIFOs and letting people know, look, this is where we stand on this. We're with our players. So that stuff goes a long way, you know, and weighing in when things hit crisis mode, where, like, you know, you have a situation like what happened with Reggie. When fans weigh in and they actually show their support and they say that, no, this is not right, this is not what we stand for as a club, not waiting for, you know, a statement from the league or a statement from the club or whatever, it goes a long way. So they play a role in, you know, lifting us up off the field as well, because they definitely play, immense roles in lifting us up while we're on the field also.
Julia, we've done this with everybody here, and I think we'll finish with you in the same way, which is just, it's an open forum, man. Stage is yours. Is there something you haven't said that you want to say?
I think what happened last night shows, the power in unity and solidarity. Obviously people will try to kind of paint a narrative or ask questions. Why did Nashville play and there were five other games? Well, I mean, that's the epitome of looking at the negative, like when there isn't even one. If if there are five out of six games weren't played because of injustices that are happening in our country, that's something we've never seen before. So why are we talking about the fact that there was a game that was played, right? People want to say, oh, was there a fraction? Was there this, that, and the other? It's clear that, you know, by and large, our players are saying that enough is enough. You don't have to have every single person on the same side of this, because that's just impossible. It's impossible to have, you know, however many hundred players we have in our league to all fall on the exact same spectrum of what they think and what they feel on all these things. That's not the point. That's asking too much of a collective of people from all over the world. But by and large, the leaders in our league are saying that enough is enough, and we're going to use what we can as athletes and as human beings to bring awareness to the situation. I think that last night was a beautiful execution of that. I thought that, you know, how it was received, by and large was very, you know, in line with what we wanted to get out of it. I don't see too much that was off the mark. Understanding where we were coming from is very, very clear. And the last thing that I'll say is, you said that you had Earl on earlier. You know, he was obviously one of the guys that was trying to figure out what was going on. And there were so many, because we all care so much about this. Like, if you guys could see my phone from yesterday, you know, you probably couldn't even fathom like how many people were just trying to genuinely get things going. And like I said, this is something that we've never seen before. Charlie can attest to the fact that, like, you know, when you're playing in the league, you spend a lot of time playing against guys and like rubbing shoulders with them. But it used to be, unless you played with a guy, you probably don't know him all that well. You might say, hey, yo, what's up? Like, what's good? Good luck or whatever. But now we're connected in ways where we can go deep with guys where we never would have even thought or fathomed before. So that's going to produce things that we can't even conceptualize at this current moment. So
facts.
Yeah. On all that, unless you guys have more questions, just wanted to say that I appreciate you guys, because I think it's very important for everybody to just talk instead of speculate, like to just actually like have conversations with guys instead of speculating, oh, what happened in Nashville or what happened with Nashville in Orlando? Just talk to the people that were there. Like, oh, instead of speculating, what were the players thinking? Why did they not play? Just talk to them. Mm-hmm. So instead of speculating, oh, why did the league make a statement in the way that they did? Just talk to the people that put the statement out. So, you know, I appreciate that type of, genuine conversation and just dialogue. So, yeah, I appreciate you guys bringing me on and bringing the rest of the guys on. So, yeah, it's not taken lightly by me, or I don't think any of the other guys either.
It doesn't end here either. We appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Jaleel, for sharing what happened and what you've been going through and what the world needs to know about what being Black in America is like. That's ultimately what people should take away. We compound that home over and over and over. Think about the why, not the what. Thank you, man. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Got to thank Jaleel Anibaba for joining the show. So much to chew on from that. So much to chew on all day long. And we'll finish here with Stephen Fry. It's an AT&T call to the field. Clearly straight to the Pacific Northwest with the beautiful trees in the background. Stephen, welcome to Extra Time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So tell me about yesterday. You and your team, as many others in Major League Soccer, made a tough decision. You boycotted your match. And the statements that came out from the Sounders afterwards were, I thought, were wonderful. I don't want to read them. I more want to hear from you, your sentiments.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was exhausting. You know, we were kind of, I can tell you my experience of how everything went down for me. So, you know, I woke up early in the morning. You know, Wednesdays for me, Wrinkle Wednesday post, excited about that almost, you know, and then get the day started with that, and then ready to fly down to LA Galaxy to have a good match. And as I was kind of doing, going through my morning routines and going through Twitter and such, kind of seeing the protests that were happening in Wisconsin, and obviously more deaths and more violence, and then seeing some very disturbing footage out of that, it was really hard to see again. And for me, what stood out for me was the stark contrast from a few days ago, how Jacob Blake was treated, and how now someone else was treated of a different race with an AR in their hand. People running after that person, yelling that guy just shot two people, and the police literally just letting them pass. That was really, really strange to see. And so I think we flew down there and obviously saw what the Milwaukee Bucks decided to do. And, at that point, it was really just kind of trying to get a conversation started in our own locker room over WhatsApp. Hey, what are we doing? What the heck is going on here? How do we feel about this? But all these things had to happen really, really quickly, and then it becomes a question of, well, what is the rest of the league doing? And as we saw with Orlando and Nashville, things were almost moving too quickly there, right? And I think then we had our meetings, we were trying to prep for the game at the same time and still be ready for that. But it became a choice of, hey, do we want to be a domino or do we want to be the first one to kick it over? Because everybody can say, oh, we'll leave it up to the first team. And it's not really fair. If you hit the lottery and you're the first team, you have to make that choice or you have to make that call. It's easy for everybody to follow like dominoes. That was one of my statements I said. I think it's important for you to just say, screw everybody else. What do we stand for? What do we think is the right response? What do we think is important? And so we came together and we decided, you know what? I felt I wasn't in the mood to play. Simple as that. With all that disturbing stuff that we were seeing, sports was like, it's an entertainment. And that's why I'm saying, and that's why I started this off by saying yesterday was exhausting. And for all the wrong reasons, right? This should not be stuff that people are dealing with. And I get a small dose of it. I get to retreat back to my white privileges out of this and go to paint today and try to recover from it. But some people don't get to do that. And so it was important that we made a statement and we tried to move things along, because as we see, George Floyd starting May, about 3 months ago, not much has changed. As a matter of fact, I think the taking knee has become part of it. And whatever. It's just a 10-second inconvenience for the people that don't like it. But that wasn't the point, is to shove something down your throat and not get change out of it. I think we need to see change. And I've seen lots of us online, some led to constructive conversations amongst my Twitter followers, which is great. Other things were spewing pure hatred, and so you're seeing a lot of emotion, and I guess that is probably a good thing that at least our actions were able to facilitate something.
Steph, I know the Sounders fan base is one of the best, and they're great at getting behind causes, supporting players that haven't even played for the club. I just look back at my experience with the car accident and seeing all the nines in Seattle. Just really special fan base. What does it mean to you to play in front of such pivotal fans and fans that really care about you and the cause, and trying to continue to make that impact in the community, but try and be one of those fan bases that tries to make an impact across the country and lead the way for you guys and for people of color. What does that mean to you?
It's been a major decision in why me and my family, we want to be here. I was traded here. I had a little bit of say in did I want to do this. I had a good feeling about Seattle as an organization, as a city, obviously winning trophies. So the things were kind of aligning. But since then, that was 7 years ago. So since then, I've gotten to know this community. I think every sports team prides themselves in having a good connection with their community, but I think we have truly a very strong connection with our community. We like to listen, and make change and help people. I think it's quite a positive environment in this city. And that's why you see a lot of startups succeed, because we like to be helpful and see our neighbors succeed. And obviously, you can't make it right for everybody. There's people from all walks of life with different opinions. But for the most part, I've enjoyed the positivity I've seen here. And now it's about, you know, going maybe a step further and making a bigger making a bigger impact on a global scale, or at least on this whole nation.
The step further, I think that we've talked about a lot on this show, both with members of BPC, but also with people who are not members, and you not being one of those members, you somebody who maybe wouldn't have to stick their neck out to speak in this situation, but have. Is there a responsibility of teammates? Is there a responsibility of not just white players in the league, but white people? And how do you sort of internalize that responsibility to be a part of this effort?
I think it's getting to the point where, for me, and maybe I'm late to the show, or maybe I don't know where I'm at in terms of my education on all of this, but silence is violence. We're the ones that can, again, we're the ones, the white people and people of privilege, we're the ones that can go back to our painting studio and forget about this. But again, there is minorities and the black community, they can't do that. Those were difficult discussions we had yesterday. It's also, you have to realize that we are a team. We're strong together, but we're people from all walks of life. Some people see a future here, others don't see a future here. They're here for a paycheck, maybe. So you have to respect everybody too, right? It's not just let's do this, there needs to be some weight behind this. We want there to be some weight behind this decision. This isn't just it's not just a domino. Hey, everybody else is doing it. Let's do it. It's going to make us look bad if we don't. That's not it. It's been difficult to want to participate in this as a white male athlete, to not want to hijack something or take meaning away from it, but I don't want to make this about white people either, but this is our problem, all of our problems, and not just a part of our community's problems. And if we want solution, we all have to come together and work on it.
One of the things I've seen you be vocal about, and I know we talked a little bit with Earl Edwards about the Seattle Sounders as an organization, talking about voting specifically coming up in the census and being counted properly and all the things that can come from that. What is it that you've seen? What is it that has caused you to maybe that be your push and where you're trying to put your energy?
I think it was a good way I realized to push people to make a change without telling them what to do, really. You know, I didn't want to be the one to, I have my opinions. I feel like I know, or I have a feeling how people should treat each other. But I'm not going to sit here and preach and tell you what to do. But one thing I can do is tell you, hey, educate yourself. Know you have a voice and you need to use that voice. And I think if people do educate themselves, they will realize that this isn't a big ask. This is a basic human right that we're asking here. The response I'm getting on Twitter are pretty good times. There's justifications of why Jacob Blake, because he had a rap sheet, because he had this and that. And this is leading to vigilante, to a Judge Dredd type of that is just absolutely crazy. Yes, I think people that have, not follow the law. This is why we have a system that should work for everybody the same. That if someone breaks the law, we prosecute them. We make sure that they get treated the way that, you know, we listen to the evidence. We do all our due diligence, and then they get punished if they screwed up. But that has to be equal for everybody. That can't be. One guy had something. He gets seven holes in his back from 2 feet out. And the other person, you know what? We'll talk to him tomorrow. We'll see what he has to say tomorrow. That's unacceptable for me. And again, you're getting me a little bit passionate because I started this by saying I want to preach, but I want people to educate themselves. I want to vote. I want them to realize they have power. And we're in a democratic society that is a privilege. We could be somewhere else where you don't even have the right, or it doesn't matter if you go out and vote because it's rigged anyways. So please educate yourselves and go out and vote.
I think that's well said, Steph. We'll let you go after this, which is just to give you a platform here. Anything that you haven't said, anything that you feel that you need to say, any feelings that are lingering inside of you after what happened yesterday and what, of course, is going to be a long journey forward.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a journey forward. And, you know, the one thing that people try to say also to shut you down is, what is this going to do? This isn't going to do anything, right? And in a way, it's true. Well, we've started again. We've maybe gone and escalated it from the knee to a canceled game to what's the next step? But you know, we have a Black Players Coalition that I know that they're talking amongst each other right now and with the league and with teams to figure out how, for example, this weekend is going to play out. This can't just be we canceled the Wednesday game. Can we postpone it for Thursday? Can we play it on Thursday? That's not what we're after, right? Again, I think this was an escalation from the knee because when we started the knee 3 months ago for us, that would spark some kind of change, and it hasn't. Now it was important to stand with other athletes, especially the way the Milwaukee Bucks so courageously started, to hopefully maybe this is this time when something happens, but. Ultimately, maybe we have to wait a few months until the elections do happen. But until then, please, everybody, like I said, educate yourselves, follow these things. Don't run away from these problems and hide in the closet from them. With these thoughts, educate yourselves and have an opinion about stuff.
Thank you, Steph, for your opinions here. We really appreciate your time, man. Best of luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay safe,
respect,
everybody.
Respect, man. Keep painting.
All right. So that's our podcast. Extra Time, August 27th, 2020. It's been a wild, sometimes depressing, sometimes hopeless year. But I find hope in those conversations, and I find hope in what all of those guys had to say and what the players in Major League Soccer did on Wednesday. The conversation will not stop. It cannot stop. We will be right there for it. Thank you to all of you who got this far, who have gotten this far with us in this crazy year. There is so much work to do, and we hope to do it with you. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.